There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
702.
The Naked Scientist.
We're taking your calls now, and we're going to play your voice notes with your science-related questions for none other than Dr. Chris Smith, the Naked Scientist. And this is a science segment. It happens every Monday just after 2:30, where you can ask whatever science preoccupation, curiosity, fascination you have. Hello, Chris.
Hello, this is my favorite time of the week. It's great. Oh, it's cool. It's so cool, isn't it? Because we sort of talk over all kinds of topics, and obviously it's very dominated by COVID at the moment, but it's really refreshing actually to talk to some people on different views, different mindsets sometimes, but the same, you know, humanity uniting us all, and therefore the same interest in science.
Keith has given us a call from Athol. As you were saying, a lot has to do with COVID. Keith, that's what's on your mind as well. Hi.
Hi, Zonia, Dr. Chris.
Hi,
here.
Keith. Cheers.
The question relates to vaccines, blood clotting, and low platelet counts. So the FDA paused the J&J vaccine rollout to conduct an investigation when six females out of 6.8 million developed a rare and severe case of blood clotting. It also transpired that the six females had a low platelet count. So we know that platelets help to stop bleeding. They assist in blood clotting, and very low platelet counts can lead to internal bleeding. So the question is, if people had a low count before vaccination, or the vaccine caused the platelet count to drop substantially, why are these blood clots developing? And then following on, is there any method or drug available that can dissolve these clots?
Oh, Keith, the answer is actually it's the other way around, which is that we think that the vaccine in a very tiny number of people, probably in the order of 1 in a million to down to 1.5 million or so, they produce in response to the vaccine a factor in the blood called an antibody targeting platelet factor 4. So you get anti-platelet factor 4 antibodies. Platelet factor 4 is a key orchestrator in the activation of platelets. So if you block it up or activate it with one of these antibodies, you can affect the way that platelets activate themselves, and they normally only activate themselves when they see a foreign surface. In other words, there is a hole in a blood vessel, they see the lining of the blood vessel, and they activate and they stick together and form a clot. If you have a system that causes widespread recruitment of these platelets, they all get drawn into the area where they're being activated, depleting the peripheral blood of its normal quota of platelets. So what is the mechanism here is you make this abnormal antibody, you trigger the activation of platelets where they shouldn't be triggered. In this case, you get these cerebral venous sinus thromboses, which are lots of platelets stuck together. And because that becomes a big sink, like a giant vacuum cleaner for platelets, which are all drawn in there, there are fewer platelets than you would expect to see normally circulating in the peripheral bloodstream. And then you get the attendant problems related to having low platelets, like a rash, what we call thrombocytopenic purpura, where you get little tiny spots on the skin corresponding to where there were damaged bits of blood vessel. And too few platelets means there's a little bit of bleeding before the platelets that are there are able to plug it. So it's the other way around than what you postulated.
Keith?
Thank you.
Thank you.
The other question was just, is there any method or drug available that can dissolve these clots?
We know that once we've diagnosed a person with this problem, we can break apart platelet thromboses. Yes, we can actually give various factors that will stop further activation of the platelets. We can prevent the progression of the condition. And actually, the body's pretty good at removing these things if the situation resolves itself. If it becomes catastrophic and completely thromboses a blood vessel, it's a different matter. But if we can get to people before that happens, we can do various things to stop the process that's causing this, because we know what the mechanism is, and then people will get better.
Thank you very much. That
Thanks for the
helpful.
Question. Thanks for kicking us off, Keith. And next we have a question about the Earth from Gary. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Azaz. Thank you very much for taking my call. Greetings to the Naked Scientist.
Hi, Gary.
Thank you very much, Chris. So I have two quick related questions regarding the moon and its orbit around our planet, right? So obviously our planet goes through that cycle of precession every 20,000 years. The axis swings like a pendulum, right? Now, with regards to the moon's own plane of orbit, does it also reciprocate and pitch as that as our own axis, you know, swings like a pendulum? And lastly, obviously, when I go into the era of space mining, do you think it's a good idea for us to obviously, I don't know, like start mining from the moon? I understand apparently that the moon apparently is hollow. Is that a good idea for us to obviously start trial running and start mining on the moon?
Mm. Gary, interesting questions. First of all, let me say, I don't know for sure that the moon's orbit changes with the inclination of the Earth, but I'll speculate that it probably does. What Gary's referring to is that the Earth is tilted at 23.5 degrees at the moment, but we know, because of for various reasons, that that's not fixed. And over long timescales, there is this so-called precession effect, where in the same way as if you had a spinning top that was spinning fast in front of you, it would actually not just spin straight upwards, it would wobble around its axis as it span. That's precession. The Earth does the same thing. Its axis tilt wobbles. Sometimes it's a bit more, sometimes it's a bit less. And it does this over really long timescales. And that has, in turn, long-term effects on things like climate. Because if you remember, the tilt of the Earth means that some parts of the Earth's surface receive a lot more energy at some parts of the Earth's orbit than others, and as a result you get seasons. And this tilt being changed will therefore have an impact on how the seasons play out and therefore how climate manifests on the Earth's surface. Now, the Moon orbits the Earth because the Earth is gravitationally active. The Earth is not a pure sphere, though. It's got a bit of a bulge around its middle, like most of us these days. And as a result, the gravitational field of an orbital body will feel that bulge, and there'll be a small force that would affect the attraction and the way in which it was held in that orbit. So if the Earth changed its orientation in space a bit, then orbital bodies would feel slightly different forces, and therefore their orbits would also change a bit too. But because this is a very slow process and it takes years to establish and re-establish these slightly different tilts, then this is going to be a very gradual thing. It's not going to be abrupt in any way. But I would speculate that the moon will follow the Earth's centre of gravity because that's what's holding it in orbit. And therefore, because the Earth is not a perfect symmetric sphere, the movement of the Earth will be mirrored by an adjustment in the orbit of the moon. The next bit of the question was, well, what about going and exploiting the moon for minerals and other things? Well, that's a possibility. In fact, there are projects now which are well and truly underway to put people back on the moon in this decade and in the forthcoming years. And one of those projects is actually to build a space station in orbit around the moon. And if the timescales are kept to, I mean, that's a bit speculative at the moment because of what's going on, but it will see a space station in orbit around the moon within the forthcoming few years. Now, one of the reasons for doing that is that it will be much easier to then survey, to visit and exploit the moon if you don't have to keep making journeys from Earth to the moon. You could do it via one of these hop-off or jump-off points. This is going to be called the Lunar Gateway. It won't make a problem with exploiting the moon doing this, though, because the moon is not hollow. The moon is actually made of the same material that the Earth's crust is made from, and that's because the moon came from the Earth. There were two planets, we think, that collided about 4.57 billion years ago, and when that collision took place, a lot of crust material from the Earth was ejected into space around the Earth, and it slowly coalesced to make our moon. So the moon is rich in minerals, but the same sorts of things as you'd find on the Earth's surface. There are other things out there in space, though, that we might conceivably find even richer sources to mine from. Asteroids that are mineral rich and metal rich and could therefore be very useful to us in the future. They're also on our radar.
Yeah, maybe that's a conversation one day about our decisions to go and do all of this out there. But that's for another day. Gary, they are your answers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Fantastic. That's Gary in Randburg. Here's a voice note that came in for you, Chris. Take a listen.
Hey, good afternoon, Azza. Wonderful show, as per usual. I've got a question for the naked scientist. It's more to do with genetics. Let's say if I, a black African, right, I have a child with, well, a white Caucasian, okay, and that child's offspring for the next 20 or 15 generations continues having children with white-only Caucasians. That generation, let's say the 10th or the 11th, will they still have my genetics as that great ancestor who was a completely 100% black African? Or how do genetics actually work? Thank you so much.
Wow. Yeah. Chris, your thoughts on that?
The way it works is that each child is a product of its parents, obviously, and shares half its genes with mum and half with dad. So, for the sake of argument, let's say dad's black, mum's white. The child will have a random selection of genes from dad, 50%, and genes from mum, 50%. So if that child has a child of its own, irrespective of the colour of the parent, again, it's the 50% rule here. So the child will give that child will give 50% of its genes, and the partner will give 50% of its genes. So the grandchild has got 25% of the genes that dad had. So if we imagine that the genes that are a black African makeup genetically are randomly smattered across the genome, then you would expect the grandchildren to have 25% black African genes and 75% white Caucasian genes from those sorts of breeding examples we've just given. And so with each generation, there is this dilution effect of 50-50. So by the time you got to 10 generations, there wouldn't be zero genes, but there would be very, very few, because there would be a huge dilution that would have gone on, but there would still be some. And this is not the same, though, as mitochondrial DNA, which is a different form of DNA, which you only get from your mum. And so that's another form. And that's also got implications, because if you only get it from your mum, and a mum, say, a black person, and you marry a white person, then although 50-50 genes from the main genetic code will be from each parent, the mitochondria will only be from the mum. And so there are some exceptions to this rule, but it will follow that 50-50 dilution rule for the main genome.
So it'll always be there, even though it becomes less and less and less. But ultimately, the difference between races, if we are to use that for the purposes of this discussion, because there is no such thing, right? It's a construct. But yeah, anyway, that the difference is what, 0.05 or something, and this is really about things like hair and skin tone.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, the
genes
the bulk
that, yeah, I mean, the thing is that the genes that give us the way we look, some of them are randomly smattered across our chromosomes, but others are in what are called a linkage group. So if you've got a gene that does a certain job in the body, right next door to it will be another gene that does a different job in the body. But even though they're two different genes, because they're really close to each other in your genome, they're next door to each other on the chromosome, because of the way DNA gets inherited, actually there's a higher chance those two genes will get inherited together. So there are some characteristics that tend to, even though there's this dilution effect I mentioned with 50-50 going each way, there will be some genes and some characteristics that do go together. They're inherited together because they're so close together on the chromosomes. Right. So you might find certain facial features or skin tones or particular hair configurations, perhaps African sort of curly hair would go along with other features, because the genes that endow you with those particular appearances, those phenotypes, are close together on the chromosomes. Others, on the other hand, are smeared all over the place in our DNA. And so they are less likely to be inherited together, those characteristics.
Oh, also random. next, let's go to Temba in Pretoria. Hello, Temba.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome, Temba.
Good. I've got a question for the naked scientist.
Yeah.
I'm wondering regarding the retinal implant stem cells trial that we're busy with in the UK. I understand it was halted because of the coronavirus pandemic. I want to find out now, are they proceeding with the trials at this stage or not?
Okay. I don't know the answer to that question, but certainly this is very important work that is an ongoing process of research. The idea being that, can we regenerate the retina by putting in cells that are stem cells or early precursors of cells that are going to produce the retina and in this way make good damage done by disease processes. There are some diseases where either a particular group of cells or a tissue doesn't develop properly or for various reasons degenerates, and as it degenerates it has a knock-on domino damaging effect on other tissues. And if you restore the underlying function, you can prevent the damage progressing and in some cases also reverse the damage. People are looking at making implants for the eye, which are patches of restorative tissue to do this. We've reported on that on this program before. I don't know, though, to what extent these trials have been interrupted by COVID. It's likely there will have been some impacts, but if you've already received one of these implants or that people are already recipients of the treatment, then they will continue to be monitored. But it may well have interrupted treating people who haven't yet received any kind of intervention just because of the constraints of working at the moment.
Temba, there.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anna. Thank you. And next we go to Midrand with Tonic. Hello, Tonic.
Good afternoon, Azania and the next scientist.
Hello.
My question is about the nuclear waste. Could we send it out to space?
So disposing nuclear waste by sending it out to space?
Is this feasible? Well, the answer is we could have in place a system to dump our nuclear waste into space and contaminate space instead. And the argument goes space is a very big place. There's plenty of room for it. The problem is twofold. One, that if you dump things in space, they have a horrible habit of coming back to haunt you later. And in fact, in the last 6 months, a mysterious object appeared back on collision course with the Earth and came very close to coming and hitting us. That object was a rocket that was put into space 40 or 50 years ago. And it was one of those sort of disposable bits of a rocket which was blasted off and it ended up in some orbit around the sun that meant that just by chance was on an Earthbound course again 5 decades later. So one of the things we'd have to make sure of is if we did dump something dangerous into space, we absolutely couldn't have it ending up on an Earthbound course or there being a chance that we might cross paths with it later, because then it could spell disaster. But probably more importantly is that in order to get something into space and out of our way, you've got to get it there in the first place. And this is very dangerous. The most dangerous aspect of any kind of space journey is the launch. And that's closely followed by the recovery of the things that are going into space, rockets and astronauts and so on, getting them back to Earth. And the danger inherent to blasting off a huge payload of highly radioactive waste that we don't want on Earth because it's theoretically harmful to people were it to be spilled all over the place, you can see the contradiction there that, okay, so we're going to put that on a rocket, which is basically a controlled bomb, and fire it off into space, where on the way up it may well have an accident, it may blow apart, it may fill the atmosphere with all kinds of high-grade radioactive waste, and there's no chance of cleaning it up, and loads of people would end up being contaminated. So for that reason, we think the lesser of two evils is, in fact, to store this stuff in as safe a way as we can, where we know it is, tell people where it is, put it somewhere safe, know for a fact it's going to be radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years and therefore to steer clear, keep an eye on it, but at least we know where it is. Better the devil you do know than take a chance with one you don't.
Oh, for that long?
Well, yes. I mean, the half-lives of some of these isotopes, some of the certain contaminants and also materials which are in these things have very, very high-level radioactive waste which will remain lethally radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years.
Wow. So it's going to be with us pretty much for a long, long time. Chris, thank you so much. There are so many questions. We'll pick up with Neville's one because I'm also curious because he says many household cleaners claim to clean 99.9% of germs. What is the comma 1%?
Yeah, what's the where do they get that number from? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the reason they do this, right, is that if I said they killed 100% of germs and I found one germ, then I would say they were wrong. But if they say 99.9%, that's as good as saying all germs, but it leaves the door open for them being wrong occasionally. So it's much harder to sue them. I think it's lawyer speak.
It's lawyer speak. All right. Thank you so much, Chris.
Till
next week.
Bye, Azza. Take care.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.